Hey guys, thanks for listening. Before this episode starts, I want to give you a great shout out that you guys are phenomenal, amazing, great people to listen to my podcast, even if it just recently picked it up or listened all the way at the beginning. I graciously appreciate it. And on to the show. Hey guys, thanks for listening to another great episode of my podcast, which, yes, this is tremendous, a huge amount, and I thank you guys for listening. Even if it's partial or all the way, I do greatly appreciate you doing that. So this episode is the best of 2023, which in a weird way, I'd done this in a particular order, but I want to make sure I'm sticking to that particular order this time around instead of the last time, which is the worst one that I did. But this one, I definitely am taking the cake for this one. So, to start off, let's go with top 10. Number 10 on this list. And number 10 is the Fast X. Now, yeah, I understand some of us are not like race car people or anything, or Vin Diesel fans or whatever. Not a lot, but this particular film just has like literally the continuation of one story that is like brought into a different side of things. So I prefer this being as one of my best because, well, this story literally ties in a lot of things. Also, this is like the end of the franchise, so it would in a weird way kind of tie this in a bow to begin with by giving us somewhat of a downer before an upper. So this, and thanks to Vin Diesel, Jason Momoa, the cast crew of this one, I see that this is definitely one of those films where we will be loving until the bitter end, recapping from all the way from the beginning to whatever it was on sidetracks and all that with this film franchise. So yeah, the numbers for it was successful a little bit, but it still did wonders. Not too much on the weekend, but the good part of the scene that I've seen in this film was literally like the recap of where this story began with Jason Momoa's character, where he is the son of the villain of, I think, either Fast Five or somewhere in between, and it basically tells him where he starts and on his way to be an avengeful angel, if you will, to go after Dom and his crew, and how he like figuring all out. And in a weird way, it's something to like look at it. There was just the reason why it's in 10 is because of that reason, as well as many other reasons that this is the end of the franchise. So on to number 9, which is, and this is a few of them are a bit of a classic, but bear with me, I have reason for them. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem. Now, as an old school fan of the 80s, early 2000s, and the somewhat 2013s, to see the franchise the way it is, definitely this one takes the cake in a way, because we were introduced into a new like computer graphics similar to Spider-Verse design, but a totally new yet retro storyline where we have, you know, the group, you know, being literally teenagers going against like literally creations of mayhem of a genetic proportion. Of course, this also brings us to some of the characters and many of things. Seth Rogen literally had this in the bag and everything, and the opening weekend was phenomenal. I mean, alone, the advertising of this film was up in par. There was a few screenings for it. There was a few interpretations of how we were reintroduced to the Turtles. But this is actually a wonderful film to actually interact with both new, old, and recurring fans. the film scene in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles that got me, like, thinking that this is going to be totally new is how we're introduced to the turtles in the rooftop, of how they're literally, like, current teenagers that's currently within this 2020 realm, so to speak, where they're social media seekers. They will, like, make sure everything's going on, and then throughout the film it's like knowing that they're outsiders, but they'll become like part of the crew later. You know, it's like it's something totally new and something exciting. The reason why this is on number 9 is because the storyline did well, the movie did phenomenal, but this is like another set of films that will be coming out and certain things, and I believe Seth Rogen has the idea of how this would be interpreted for teens and teens alone. On to, and I might have some words with this one, on to the next one that is on the list is number 8, Super Mario Brothers. Now, don't get me wrong, the numbers for this particular movie did wonders. It did peak well, didn't surpass how Five Nights at Freddy's happened, but this particular film did re-spark the video game franchise, if you will, by giving us an idea of how our characters are actually jump into a world of, you know, of gaming proportion. This actually did open a lot of doors for many things. Charlie Day and Chris Pratt being the voice of Mario and Luigi is fine, as well as our good friend and original Mario voice actor Charlie Monian. I do apologize for the last name, but with him having a bit of a voice cameo in it, as well as paying homage to like nearly every single original retro game out there, this is definitely one that would like give us more. Believe it or not, the scene on this one does pay homage to a game, which is Mario's brother Luigi going around a creepy castle going against the skeleton turtles. I don't know, it's something. What occurred during this weekend was how much blockbuster excitement was that everyone's like literally like at arms and at hands of how this became to be. And in the terms for movie theaters, this was definitely a huge payoff, if you will, that the studios are looking to aim to keep moving forward with movies exclusively to theater before hitting streaming. And this would be one of the topper. And not only that, we literally had like a mini thing of marketing on certain things, and it's definitely helps a whole lot on this whole thing. So it's huge. The reason why it's number 8 is because of how I don't know how to describe it, but it did fulfill its job to be part of top 5 in my list, but it just like literally like has a proportion of where it's going, you know. But it's not bad, it's actually kind of okay. On to number 7, and I know I'm probably going to have a lot of, you know, wording with this, but how I see this one, not a lot of comic book movies made it good. This one actually did give us a propelled moment that we will see a bridge or a gap or something like that. And the movie I'm referring to is The Marvels. Now, I know there's going to be a fight, but hear me out. Now, of course, Brie Larson, Amani, the trio have successfully created a lot of things in this film, bridging gap between religious groups, definitely bridging with many different characters that actually did portray the Marvel name. If those who are not comic book geeks either. Trust me, what Monica Rambeau was originally named Captain Marvel in the 90s until she became adapted to the name Proton. And our Miss Marvel is literally a comic book rendition of how I believe a Indian gal who was who's transformed by Terrigen Mist to transform into this elongated inhuman. However, in the MCU version, we literally see a light or a half human, half light being inherited a bangle that was of alien origin and able to be reintroduced again with the second half of the bangle, which means that Miss Marvel in the Disney Plus series has bridged a gap from one side bangle to the next. And continuing Monica Rambeau's powers sequel, in a way, is from WandaVision to now. Now, for Brie Larson's Captain Marvel, she literally had like a bit of a gap with between her first movie, the Avenger movies, and then now with the Marvels, which, and it's hell is good. But even so, by that definition, it is a fantastic movie to see. Especially this one scene, and I kid you not, I would actually fight for this scene to be talked about. And it's the Bollywood scene where there's songs, there's dance, and there's an introduction of that that wonderful character. I will not say his name. Some of you fans know him, but I think he was part of a group, BTS, I think. I don't know. But that scene literally portrays like both a different set of aliens or a different set of people who would do a number and then end up being like this huge payout in the film. However, due to the openings and all that, I would literally start seeing some sort of residuals, if you will, that this movie will have reached cult classic status inside the streaming service more than the box office. The reason why this is number 7 is because this did propel me to want to be in the top 5, but due to the trying to hidden the secret ending and all that, it's not terrible. Those who want to spoil the secret ending and all that, that's like, dude, come on. That's the reason why it's a Marvel movie. And that helps bridge a gap between a certain number of things as well as a certain number of groups. And if you're trying to wonder about that, the Marvels at the very end hinted our gap between worlds with Marvel's X-Men. I said Marvel's X-Men for a reason, so bite me with that later. Number 6. This one, it should have reached top 5, but the other movies kind of beat it out. Kind of. But this does, like, help out with a little. It's another comic book movie, and this would definitely also have another sequel on the works that's already going on for next year or the next 2 years because of the writer strike, the writer-actor strike, so, you know, bear with us on that one. And the movie on top 6, number 6, would be Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Now, this one was the sequel of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, where we first introduced Miles. Now we're continuing with Miles being, you know, an actual Spider-Man, knowing that there's a whole other realm or other universe or another patch of groups of a lot of Spider-Men that is literally like gave us that this gave us more like a fan recall than a fan vibe, because there was a lot of Spider-Man, especially from No Way Home, that gave us the multiverse Spider-Man deal. But this one gives us the cake that there not only there's all the Spider-Man, but there's all the other Spider-Mans as well. Came from the time of our 90s version, which is the Ultimate Spider-Man, in a way, or Spider-Man Unlimited, and then there's the Spectacular Spider-Man. There was a lot to talk about. Even so, there was a lot of Spider-Man, even the ones from the comics that were introduced into this thing, especially Lego Spider-Man. the box numbers on this one was astronomical to mine eyes. I literally had to wait in line at a concession of all places to just get my food because a lot of people showed up, filled up the seats, filled up everything, and this literally took the cake for this one. The best scene on this whole thing here is how we're introduced in Spider-Gwen's story, which is Haley Steinfeld, how she is feeling like all the feels of being a Spider-Man in a way, and also gives us a backstory of her own origin with her friend, you know, being Peter, and how she is pretty much trying to, I don't know, either redeemed herself or trying to like prevent any more problems. And then at the end, literally seeing that the right choice is to make Miles one of those Spider-Mans that is differential from the other Spider-Man without interrupting, you know, some sort of canon event. But even so, when talking about canon events, that's like destined or already pre-chosen work for a person who's like ready to go. So yeah, the reason why this film is number 6 is, again, this one would have made top 5, but the other films actually kind of beat it out, and I'm even surprised for the number 1 spot. So let's go ahead and finalize this whole thing with the top 5. Number 5 would be actually Barbie. Yeah, the box number was right there up to Oppenheimer, but both of them competed to one another, and Barbie kind of like beats out more than Oppenheimer due to the fact that this is a Mattel product where every girl who had or has owned a Barbie at a significant point of their lives, even a collectible one, by the way, literally saw this happening. Margot Robbie's style of how to introduce Barbie was something that is definitely new and planned on the get-go, especially when you have the director who did Wonder Woman. So however, when we watch the film, there is a scene in there that it is towards the end, and it gives us an idea of how if one can live or one can just breathe without knowing what they're made for, they're literally just having this idea of what they want to be instead of who they should be. And, you know, with the original creator of Barbie being portrayed by Rye Perlman, she gives the idea that Barbie can be anyone and anything. And that in itself should be, you know, like a fantastic thing to go with. The reason why this film is on my top 5, it's because there is a hidden story within this film that like dragged out. And I, for one, do agree with majority of the other critics that this is definitely a heartwarming, fun movie for pretty much anyone to watch, especially if you watch the Ken numbers in this one. Ryan Gosling did pull it off with Sam Yu in this one. If you don't believe me, check it out. Anyways, number 4, and this is actually a different film on this list. The movie is called Past Lives. That's reached number 4, and here's, in the box office, it's not too drastic, but it should have been a well-known film since it came from, I believe, Korea or somewhere. But even so, this film deals with two friends who grew up together and one moved away to only come back later in life as an adult to just, you know, recap on that one. The scene alone for them to, you know, react to one another was kind of heartwarming and definitely gives us a vibe as the audience is like, oh, they're finally found each other and they're gonna be fun, the friends again, and yay. The only issue that rose during the opening of this one was not a lot of people have seen advertising for Past Lives, and even so, Past Lives hardly make a huge enrollment. But the reason being that the the movie has a significant amount of newsworthy is because of how the storyline is that how two people grew apart in their early teen lives towards adulthood is both remarkable and something to latch on to for those who have done that in the past. But even so, this film literally grabs the heartstrings of some old adults, some young adults too, if also that happens to them as well. The reason why this one's number four on my list is because this film literally had a resounding bell to me, and this one has literally like makes me rethink of a few things on this whole thing. So, but Past Lives is definitely one of the movies you should check out when you have a chance. It should hit streaming services soon, but even so, I would highly recommend to see this soon. Number three, and believe it or not, I can't even believe this myself because I actually remember looking at my own little notes about this one. Number three is Oppenheimer, and this was, alongside with Barbie, was literally one of the top competitors in the whole thing, and they're both Oscar-worthy films, if you believe it or not, on Barbie. But Oppenheimer was literally based off of a actual guy, an actual inventor, by the way, who literally, like, solved an atomic equation to the atom bomb. And I'm a bit surprised about that myself. The director is Christopher Nolan, and the performance from Silas Murphy. It's already renowned and renowned, and also he's a wonderful actor. If you haven't seen his work, if you haven't seen Batman Begins or A Quiet Place Part 2, I just named two of his films. It literally gives us the idea of what was behind the guy who actually created the atom bomb and all that. Especially when he's like solving this one scene. It's already on like YouTube as a clip and everything. But it's like he's realizing that he may have solved it, but what cost did he did when he solved it? Like, did he solve it for the better or did he solve it for the worse? And this gives this performance like the idea of how we, the audience, see this person is that did a good thing or a bad thing? And that's like definitely huge on this one. The movie did perform well in box office, but it did kind of dwindle down to the mere fact that the film had succeeded on doing everything, especially when it was filmed on an IMAX projector or IMAX format film. And that is like huge. If you're having your actor or your director looking at the idea of the process, as well as looking at how that is approached, this would definitely give not only the production an idea, but also resurrect some old things, like 35mm film, or yeah, definitely the IMAX projector film that Christopher Nolan filmed it on. So this is why it's number three on my list, because how we are reintroduced to old technology to film something that is supposed to be old, and at the same time gives us this vibe of what's going on, what's going to happen, and this whole thing, and how it would proceed as the main things. Of course, there was some controversial because there was a scene in there talking about like a Jewish thing and another thing, but far as I know, the storyline is basically just surrounding that era of age or that time of how things are happening during it. So it's literally out of hands. Number two, and you people can find me on this one, but you can't because this is on my list. Number two would be Killers of the Flower Moon. Now, bear with me. Now, majority of us, including myself, have witnessed Titanic from beginning to end. And that's a long movie. And then we've experienced, yet again, Avatar. And not The Last Airbender, by the way. No. This is the Avatar Big Tall Blue People Avatar. Now, this is one movie where it literally need to be told the way it need to be told. So, of course, the box office for this one, it did well, but it didn't do too well. But even so, the storyline in itself literally brings our perspective of what we're looking at and what we're seeing is definitely, and I do mean definitely, definitely something to consider, the mere fact that we have done a lot of portrayal of many things, but this one really takes the cake when it comes down to a certain group of individuals that literally wanted to tell the story that this happened, actually happened. Just like Oppenheimer, this is also a period film, so definitely this works out. However, we have a lot of talented members in this film. We had Leo DiCaprio. He played the husband to the indigenous wife or indigenous person in his family, which is his wife. And then we have I believe Robert De Niro being the interrogator of what's going on around there and everything in this film. The scene alone between these two was applicable of seeing how one tugged over the other, and as well as knowing that this is like a United States issue comparing to everything else. The only reason issue I've seen on this film is that a lot of people have seen it, but its demographics was actually more aimed for older adults instead of teens. But even so, the length of the film was deliberate because Martin Scorsese, he literally brought himself to attentive onto script, because this is a very long script and ornate detailed on telling us what's going to happen or what's going on between, you know, factions of men and women of indigenous descent compared to everything else. This one literally takes the cake on my list as being part number two, because there's aspect of the film that I enjoy and there's some aspects that literally like, yeah, okay, that did happen. So I mean, who would not want to watch this movie and not get enthralled with it, honestly? Finally, top one, number one, and yes, you guys can definitely fight me on this one, because even so, I find this very, very huge and very foretelling, if you will. And the movie, which is actually more like a concert, is Taylor Swift's The Eras Tour movie concert. Now, the numbers alone from both opening to like the next week or whatever, that one literally takes the cake, because the mere fact that it just brings a lot of people, and not to mention people who are Taylor Swift fans, to the movies, who could not afford the movie ticket or move before the concert tickets to see Taylor Swift on stage right there and enjoying themselves. The performance alone has Taylor Swift doing all her numbers, all her work, all her, you know, everything from where she does all on stage. And that in itself, it's already grand. It's fantastic. Especially when you start hearing the old school stuff that she did prior, before, you know, integrating all that. Her 1989 Redux music is right there and everything. The only problem I have on this one during the opening was how largely populated it was during the time, because my lord, this was like literally like trying to find space on a wall. One, two, trying to ignore the people who are dancing in front of the movie screen, after trying to not be mad after being in a long line to get your snacks. But even so, this concert film, by the way, literally brought its attention to me, because how the team that put together this film didn't go through a standard studio. No. This is how movies work. You get the studio to produce the film. And then you get the film to the distributors, and then from the distributors to the theaters, and the theaters to the folks. Now, here comes the kicker. Yes, there was filming during the concerts. Concerts, by the way, because if I was ever doing a take, I would literally need to take a double take, another double take. But even so, we got footage from the concerts. They didn't go through a studio. They went directly to the distributors. And from the distributors to the folks in the theaters, and the theaters to the audience. Which means that this film, highly successful, by the way, literally went the extra mile. Jump a few people, just one little man, comparing to the big man that's right there between studios and distributors. Because the distributors are supposed to be putting out the film that the studio is given. And then from the distributors to the theaters, which is basically any theater, anything. Which means that when you go bypass the studio, this theater or the distributors could put it in any which theater, in any which company. And in any ways, you get to see this movie in AMC, Regal, Cinemark, other big name theaters that is across the globe as well as across the nation, to just watch film footage from the concert, to watch at their own little, you know, discretion of theater. And then somehow it will hit streaming services sometime later in months after figuring out which streaming service will take it. Which is basically nearly every single, you know, streaming service. But even so, this one literally took the cake on top one because of how the distribution of film has, like, literally bypassed the one major hurdle, which is the studio. So, yeah, those are my top 10 2023's best films that I've seen. And yes, of course, this is a wonderful standing ovation to leave this as the end, because you kind folks are fantastic and wonderful. So hopefully you guys are going to do quite well. We are doing a redux, if you will, or redo of the brand. So I'm definitely going to keep the name. I'm just changing it up a bit. But even so, I gracefully appreciate you listening to these episodes, as well as past episodes, while they're still up. And then to enjoy the new episodes that will come in later next year. We are changing gears on many things, as well as distributing less gaming, because I don't know what's going on in the gamer world. So that's the other reason why you don't hear me talking about gaming anymore. So until the next time, which I hope it's sometime soon or sometimes later in seasons, you guys have a wonderful time. Graciously thank you from the bottom of my heart to this channel, to you guys, to your ears, as well as around the world. Until the next time, you be safe out there, you be good, and as always, see ya. Hey guys, again, thank you super much for listening to the episode. Greatly appreciated. Future episodes will be on the way, but its release dates are unknown for the time being. But until then, I hope you guys have a joyous year, or even beginning of the year, because I will be making sure that I'll come back next year sometime later. I don't know when, but thank you super much and appreciate it.